We begin the current daven, set the site the daven mem hei. We begin seven lines down for the top of the yamid. The Gemara continues explaining our Mishnah from the previous daven that opened up this parak. We mentioned regarding Egla Rufa that part of the procedure is that there have to be members from the Sanhedrin, there's a machlekes if there's three or five, that have to come to the site of where the Egla Rufa procedure is being done, where the person was found slain. And their objective over there is to measure the distance from the slain person to which is the closest city. And then the elders of the city come and they do smicha and they say, we didn't spill the blood. The kahanim say that there should be an atonement for the people. Now, says the Gemara Masnit in our Mishnah, which again had a machlekes regarding how many members of the great Sanhedrin come, whether three or five, but didn't make any mention of the king coming or the kohen gadol, the high priest coming. Says the Gemara, the Leker Lezer ben Yaakov, obviously is not like Lezer ben Yaakov, because we learned in the Braisa that he interprets the words that we had mentioned, Zekenecha v'Sheftecha, in our Mishnah, whether that Zekenecha means two and Sheftecha means another two, or Zekenecha only means two, and then you have another one because it can't be equal to be three members of the Sanhedrin, and Sheftecha teaches you that it is from the Sanhedrin, not Gadol. Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, he interprets it differently. Zikainacha, just from the words your elders, he says, Zu Sanhedrin, that's a reference to the Sanhedrin. When it says Sheftecha, your judges, Zeh Melech B'Kohen Gadol, that's a reference to, you know who else comes down there to where the Egla Rufa is being done? Is the king and the high priest. How so? Because Melech Desiv, regarding a king, it says the Pasuk in Mishlei, Melech B'Mishpat Yamed Arz, the king establishes the earth with judgment. So we see that a Shefet is a reference to a king. And more of a Kohen Gadol, so we find this same concept by a Kohen Gadol, as it says a Pasuk in Devarim, says, Uvasa ela kahanim alavim, you will come to the kahanim of the Levim, ve'la shevet dasheyeh v'gayim, and regarding the judges that will be in your days to decide your halachas, so we see that the kahanim are considered shevetim judges. So when it says shevetecha, plural, it refers to two other judges, which is the king and the high priest. But our Mishnah that makes no mention of the king and high priest coming is obviously not like the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Now, Ibailu, they had the following question regarding Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. The Melech v'Kohen Gadol hu d'palik, is it, as we said, that he's obviously arguing the Tanav Mishnah? Is he only arguing in regards to that we also have the king and the high priest of a Sanhedrin, but regards to the Sanhedrin coming from the high court, there, Ikre Bihuda, whether like Rabbi Huda, as we mentioned, that Mishnah holds five members of the 71 member Sanhedrin come, or Ikre B'Shimon Tzirile, or that he holds like Rabbi Shimon, that only three members come, but that he agrees that it doesn't have to be the entirety of the Sanhedrin HaGadol, or maybe, ask the Gemara, but Sanhedrin Nami Polik, maybe when he's arguing in how he defines the terms in the Pasuk about who comes, not only is he arguing regarding the king and the high priest, but he also argues regarding how many members of the high court come, that he holds Adika Kula Sanhedrin, that until you have all the members of the high court. What's the understanding of his opinion? Some of Yisrael says, Toshima, we can bring a raya from the following brisa. The brisa says, Mitzoin Zokin Mamri. If a Zokin Mamri, which is a term given to somebody that Mamri is from the word of Hamra, of rebels, if you have an elderly person that rebels against the high court, and the reason for this is that the halach of Zokin Mamri only happens if he defies the law and the ruling of the high courts of the 71 members of the court, as the Gemara learns in the first parak, Mesechta Sanhedrin. So the Braisa comes to explain, if let's say this Zokin Mamri encounters the great Sanhedrin, Abe Pagi. Now Abe Pagi is a reference to the outermost perimeter of the city of Yerushalayim. So whatever is within that perimeter is called Bei Pagi. Now Rashi just says the term Bei Pagi comes from the word of, as we find elsewhere, the word Pagi is a reference of being closed in, which is used in the context of the halter that's used by the saddle that holds it together. That's called Bei Pagi. It's a reference to what's the outer perimeter of Yerushalayim. So on that, the Rashi says, if he encounters the great Sanhedrin in the outer perimeter of Yerushalayim, the Himra Lein, and he rebels against them, in other words, he asks them a question, they tell him what the halacha is, and guess what? He goes back to his own city, and he paskins, and he directs the law as he had said beforehand, not like how they had told him. They told him, actually, the halacha is not like that. But he defies their ruling. Says the Braisa, Yachal Teham Ras Tamra, you would think that now he's considered Zokin Mamri, which is the halacha, and there are certain consequences if you defy the ruling of the high courts. Tamalemetz, the Braisa teaches that it's not the case. Because the Pasuk in the Varm says, in the context about listening to the high court and not to rebel, it says, Vekamta v'alisa l'makam, that you will get up and you will rise up and you will come up to the place which is the designated place of where the high court judges, which is in the Lishkas Hagazas, which is in the Beis Hamikdash, in the Chamber of Hewn Stone. Melamed, says the Brisa, comes to teach Sham Makom Goyim. It's the place that causes. In other words, the rebelliousness has to come only if they told you the law in the Chamber of Hewn Stone, in the Beis Hamikdash. But if you encounter them somewhere else, like in the outer perimeter of Yerushalayim, and there they tell you and then you don't listen to them, that won't give you a halachic status of a Zaken Mamre. That's what the Brisa says. Now that explains the Gemara in context of Rav Yosef approving to answer the question that was asked. The Nafik Kama, how many of the members of the Great Sanhedrin were out there in the perimeter of Yerushalayim that you have to tell me in the Brisa that by rebelling against them, he'd be exempt? Because again, of the reason that we're saying, because it was out of the area of the Bez, and it wasn't in the Chamber of Hewn Stone, it was somewhere outside. As the Gemara explains, Elam did nothing miktasin, if it was only some of the members of the Sanhedrin HaGadol that he encountered who told him what the halacha is. So then the question is, maybe the members that were still inside, meaning in the Lishkas Hagazas at that time, maybe they actually would have held like this Zakin who had asked the question, and he held otherwise, not like the members of the Sanhedrin that he met. And therefore the question that the Gemara is posing is that, why would you think that he would be liable, that you have to say that he's exempt because it wasn't asked in the area of the Lishkas Hagazas? What do you mean? You shouldn't be liable just because you didn't have all the members there. Maybe some of the members actually would have held like him. So Elipshit, rather, says the Gemara, it's obvious, the Nafakula we're talking about, that all of the members, all 71 members, were over there in Beit Pagi, and he counted all of them. And that is the Chiddush saying, oh, so now they all told them what the halacha is, and he went, not like them. You would think that it would be chayiv. That's the Kamash Malan, that the Pasuk says, no, it has to be that they had told them the law in the Lishkas Hagazas. Now, so on that, as continues the Gemara, Ulamai. Now, for what purpose were they outside of the area of the Lishkas Hagazas? Ilad Vaharishos, if it was something voluntary, that they had gone out of the area of the Beis HaMikdash, the question is, Mimatsu Nafki? Could all of the members of the Sanhedrin go out for a voluntary purpose? But Vaksiv, there's a pasuk in Shir HaShirim that allegorically describes this, the Great Sanhedrin. The pasuk literally translates as Shavareich, your navel, the belly area, which is a reference to the Sanhedrin, because they sit in what's called Tivura Shel Eretz Yisrael, the navel, in other words, the center of Eretz Yisrael, which is what the Beis HaMikdash is. Agan HaSahar, which is a basin of water in the shape of a sahar, which is made like in the shape of a half of a round moon, which is, that's how the Sanhedrin would sit, and the reason why they would sit in that semicircle was that they all could see each other. Now, on that the pasuk says, al yechza hamezik, that the mixture should not be diminished, which is a reference like the measurement of dilution, which generally, at least in biblical time, Talmudic times, how wine was made, was two parts water and one part wine. So what the reference is that it's saying is that so too the Sanhedrin, who was made in the shape of the Agan Hasar, also should not be Mechzer HaMezik, and that is you have to be left at least with a third, which is the primary of the wine, and you have another two-thirds of water. The Mezik itself, what the actual primary part has to be, that root has to remain. You have to have at least a third of the Sanhedrin always there, which that means, as the Gemara translates, Shem Nitzrach Echad Mem Latzis, if one of the members of the Great Sanhedrin has to leave, Im Yesham Esim B'Shleisha Keneged Sanhedrin Ketana, then only if there's at least still 23 members left, which correlate to the lower Sanhedrin, there were many layers and levels of hierarchy of the courts in the Jewish system. The highest was the 71 in the members of the Hewn Stone. Then there was a lower courts of 23. If you have at least 23 left, then you'd say, then a member of the Sanhedrin could go out. But if not, he can't go out. So then the question is, how is it that you're saying that all of them, which we said obviously it's only if all of them he encountered in Beit Pagi, were outside, what was it that allowed them to go out? For Dvar Rishus, you're not allowed to go out. There has to be at least 23 members remaining. Elipshit, or rather concludes the Gemara, it's obvious, like Dvar Mitzvah. Why were they all out, that he encountered them, this Zaken Mamre, a Beit Pagi? Because they went out for a mitzvah purpose. Now concludes Rav Yosef, Lamai. What were they doing? What mitzvah do you need this Sanhedrin to be out for? Lav lemedidas eglo? Isn't it to measure the area of the decapitated calf to the closest city? Rebelezer ben Yaakov, and obviously it's going like Rebelezer ben Yaakov, who he argues on both Tanoim and our Mishnah, Rebbe Yehuda and Rebbe Shimon, and he holds that the entirety of the Sanhedrin has to be out, Because where else do you find the necessity of the whole Sanhedrin being out that this Zakin Mamri encountered them Abay Pagi? So then Abay says, no, there's no proof from this Braisa. Because Dim Allah Savala ear. Maybe the reason why there was a mitzvah purpose that required all of the Sanhedrin to be out of the Beis HaMikdash was because they were coming to increase the area of the city of Yerushalayim or Va'al Azaris, or they're coming to increase the area of the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. Because it's not like we're in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Ein meisif na'ala ir v'alazaris." You na'ala increase the area of the city of Yerushalayim or the courtyards. Ela bebezdin shal shem be'echad. Only if you have the courts of the high courts of 71, and that's where they were at. So there was no raya that it was because of the egel arufa, which would be like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, who argues and holds you need the entirety of the Sanhedrin. Maybe it's not the case. Maybe it's only for a different mitzvah. And maybe Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov holds you don't need the entirety of the Sanhedrin. Now, however, the Gemara does say, but Tanika Vaseidra Rav Yosef, there is a Braisa that says, clearly, like Rav Yosef, that he held that Rav Elazar ben Yaakov holds that you need the entirety of the Sanhedrin, not like Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon of our Mishnah. Because the Braisa says clearly, Mitzan Abeis Pagi, if the Zakir Mamre encounters the Sanhedrin HaGadol on Beis Pagi, the Himralin, and he rebels against them, Kugoyin, what would be, when would you have the entirety of the Sanhedrin out? For a mitzvah purpose, for example, Sheyatzu L'medidas Eglo, that if they all went out, again, because that's what we're talking about, it would only be Zakir Mamre if all of them are there, they went out to measure the calf by the Egla Rufa, or they went out to increase the area of the city and the courtyards. So again, clearly we see in this Braisa showing us that, yes, like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that measuring of the Egla Rufa requires the entirety of the Sanhedrin. Now the Braisa concludes, Yochal Te'amra Osa Hamra, you would think that now there where you have the entirety of the Sanhedrin, but it's not in Beis HaMikdash, it's somewhere else, that his rebelliousness would give him the status of a Zakir Mamre. Tamalema, that's what the Pasuk teaches, as we mentioned in the previous Braisa, V'kamta V'alisa, that no, it's only if you get up and you go to them in the Lishkas HaGazis, then you're a Zakir Mamre, Malamet Shamakam Gurm. That teaches that it's only the place of the Beis HaMikdash that gives it the halach of a Zakir Mamre. But even if it's the entirety of the Sanhedrin, but if it's somewhere else, like Abay Pagi, then he doesn't have the halacha of a Zakir Mamre. But again, we prove this interpretation of Rav Yosef, that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov would disagree not only in regards to Melech and Kohen Gadol, but also in regards to the members of the Sanhedrin, that you need all of them. Now the Mishnah said, Nimtza Taman Begal. If let's say the slain person was found buried underneath a heap of bricks, Eitalu Be'ilon, or he's hanging from a tree. So then we said that you don't do the Egla Rufa procedure then. So the reason for that is, as we brought the Pesukim in the Mishnah, that each part of the word in the Pasuk excludes, as we'll see in this Gemara too also, a different one of these cases. Now, says the Gemara, Lema Masni, let's say that our Mishnah, that learns out from the word Ba'adama, that excludes when it's Taman, when it's buried beneath a pile of bricks, that's Rabbi Huda Hivul Rabbanan. That's like Rabbi Huda and not like Rabbanan of the following Machlekes Tanam. The Tanakh learned a Braisa. Pasuk says in the Varm in a different context, says, V'shachachto Eimer Basada, which is in the halacha of Shikha, which is one of the Matnas Aniyim, that if you forget a bundle of your sheaves in the field, so then you have to leave it for the poor, you can't come back and take it for yourself. Now, on that, says the first opinion, Prat Letaman, when it says that you forgot your sheaves, you forgot your bundle in the field, that excludes if it was hidden, if it was buried underneath something. Then the halach of shikha would not apply. That's the Rabbi Huda. Chacham say, no, basada, when it says in the field, it's l'rabas esatam. Actually comes to include something that was hidden, that is in the category of shikha, and you can't come back and get it. Now obviously what we see from this machalik is Rabbi Huda holds, he interprets when it says basada, it means like alpaneha sada. Has to be on the field, which obviously it excludes if it's not on the field, rather it's buried beneath a pile of rocks. Whereas according to Rabbanan, it sounds like that the word basada means in the field. The base can mean in, it's in the field, meaning it's actually buried underneath a pile of rubble. So therefore it seems like our Mishnah that learns out from the word ba'adama, that excludes if it's buried in a gal, must mean because the town of our Mishnah is like a Behuda who holds that basada means on the field, not in the field. So it's like a Behuda, not like Rabbanan. So Amar Rav says, no, Filotem Rabban, you could even say that the town of our Mishnah is like the Rabban. But, Hacha Minyani Dikra, it's contextual. Here, based on the context of the Pasuk, you have to expound it. And Hasa Minyani Dikra, and there, accordingly, you have to expound it according to the context of that Pasuk, as the Gemara explains. When we said Hacha Minyan de Kroa, that here it's based on the context of the Pasuk, this is because it says in the Pasuk, Ki Yimotze Chalol. It says if you're going to find a slain person. Now, on that the understanding is, Hechad Mishtakech. It sounds like wherever you find a slain person, even if he's buried on any other pile of rubble. So therefore, obviously, you have to say, when then the Pasuk says that you find a Ba'adamo on the earth, must be prat l'tamen. It must be coming to exclude someone that's buried underneath a pile of rubble. And that, to the contrary, that what is Ba'adama coming to say contextually must mean it's coming to say on the surface of the earth and not buried in it. Because if it was coming to say in the earth, then I wouldn't need it to tell you that. Because already from Ki Yimotze, I know wherever it's found, even if it's buried in the earth. So it must be from the context that Ba'adama comes to say, no, not wherever you find it. It's only if it's on the earth, to exclude if it's buried. Now, v'hasa minyan d'kra, whereas over there, it's also contextual. Because the Pasuk says over there, in the halacha of shikha, ki sikser kitzircha basatcha, that if you're going to reap, you're reaping in your field, v'shachachta, amen, you're going to forget a bundle. So the halacha is, you have to leave it, you can't come back and get it. Now, from the Pasuk, we understand, from the comparison that it's talking about reaping, and it's talking about what you're forgetting, is that shikha dumi d'katzer. The halacha of you're forgetting your bundle is similar to the process of reaping, which is makatzer begali. Just like when you're reaping something that is revealed that you could see. You don't reap something that's buried. Av shikha begali. So we would learn that from the context of the pasuk that also the halacha of forgetting is only something that's revealed. Now, just purely based on that, we would have excluded tamun from the understanding of the pasuk, unless if there would be something else that would be coming to include Tamun. So hence, Kasar Achman the Basada, so when the Pasuk then says the term in the field, obviously it's L'Rabba says it must be it's coming to include Tamun, because what do you mean? We already excluded it from its comparison to Katzer. So what are you adding on Basada? Must mean that Basada here in this context means to say in the field, meaning even if it's not on the field, it's in, it's buried. So therefore, it's not a contradiction. We could say that the town of a Mishnah would be even like Drabbanon. So although over there they include Taman and now Mishnah is excluding Taman, yeah, again, it depends on the context. What we have known before that word, now when you say Badama, it could either be including or excluding. It could either be interpreted as on the field or in the field. Now the Gemara asks, so therefore, the Rabbi Huda Nami, well then according to Rabbi Huda also, typically Mishikcha Dumi de Katzer, if the way we just described that even before the word Basada, you already have the comparativeness of what's being forgotten to what's being reaped, so I already know that we're going to be excluding something that's Taman. So why, according to Behuda, do you need the word Basada to teach you that it has to be on the field and not in the field, if I already know that it can't be in the field, in other words, it can't be concealed from the comparativeness to Katzer? So the Gemara says, you're right, Enachanami, that he knows, not like the Chacham, who they learn out from the word Ba-Sada, in other words, from that it's coming to include Ba-Adama, what's inside, that he knows that it's excluded from the comparison to Katzer. The El Ba-Sada, literally, so then in Chanami, so what do you need the term Ba-Sada according to Behuda for? Miboyle, le Rabbe Shuk has come, actually, it's coming to teach a different halacha. In other words, you're right. He knows we're excluding Taman from comparing it to Katzer. So then what does he do, Basada? That's coming to include a different halacha that it's what you forgot in the standing crop. In other words, usually shikha is something that you already reaped. You had a bundle and you forgot it, so you can't go back and get it. With this part, what this pasuk now is coming to include according to Behuda, is that if, let's say, someone forgot a corner of the field to reap it, it's still standing. That's what the negative prohibition that the pasuk says over there, loisoshav lekachti, and I'll go back to take it, it means to say you can't go out and reap that now either. Which again, as Rashi translates that according to Behuda, when the Pasuk says, v'shachachta imer basada, that if you forget a bundle in the field, he's going to translate that the word v'shachachta is going individually on imer and on basada. In other words, v'shachachta imer, if you forgot a bundle, or if v'shachachta basada, you forgot even in your field, and you forgot even what's still standing in your field, either one you can't go ahead and come back for. Now, so the Gemara asks, so Rabbanan, according to Rabbanan, so shikha is coming in Allahu. So where do they know this halacha that even if you forget standing crop, which you didn't even reap yet, that you can come back for? Because obviously they learn that from this term of basada to mean in the field, that we are including tamun. They hold that it is considered shikha, not like a Behuda. so they can't use it for this halacha. So where do they know this halacha from? So the Gemara says, "Nafkalahu mechisikzer kitzircha basotcha v'shochachta," which is a similar type of a pasuk, but a different pasuk, which says that when you're going to reap the reaping of your fields and you're going to forget, which what the translation of that is, although v'shochachta usually is translated as part of the next part of the pasuk that you're going to forget your bundle and so on, but the way the Rabbanan are interpreting it is that if basotcha v'shochachta, that if you forgot part of your field, meaning to even reap it in the first place, that's also included in shikha. But Rabbi Huda, he can't use that basadcha to teach you that halacha, and rather he knows it from the other term of basada, because miboyle lik Rebavo am Rebelaza, he needs that term of basadcha to teach you a different halacha of Rebavo in the name of Rebelaza. Because the am Rebelaza, he says, that word basadcha comes to teach you, prat, it comes to exclude, l'shet safu oymin l'toich stecha veray, that if the wind came and blew his bundles from his land, and it blew it into his friend's field, and therefore he forgot about it because it's out of sight, out of mind. He didn't realize that the wind blew into his friend's yard. He thought it wasn't his. So we learn that from basadcha that the halach of shikha that you now come back and get is only if it's in your field, but not if it's in your friend's field. That's not going to be considered the halacha of shikha. Whereas Rabbanan, according to Rabbanan, where they learn out this exclusion of the halacha of if it's in your friend's field that it's not considered shikha, mi basodeh. In other words, because this pasuk which says basadcha should have, for all practical purposes, said ki sikta kitzircha basadeh. If you do your reapings in a field, obviously your field, but in a field, b'shachachta, and you forget it, but it doesn't say basadeh, it says basadcha. So from there he learns out both halachas, A, the halacha of basadeh, and also basadcha, where he's learning A from basadcha of the smiches to b'shachachta, this halacha of that shikha's kama, and also from the fact that it uses the chav sofit, and the chav comes to tell you it has to be your field and not someone else's field. Whereas Rabbi Huda, basadeh basadcha chole mashmalei, in this context he doesn't darshan, doesn't expound two different drashas from the fact that the word sadeh and sadcha. No, he learns one halacha. Basadcha means to say that it has to be your field, not someone else's field. Not like Rabban who want to learn two drashas from there, which A, yeah, basadcha, your field, not someone else's field. But also from the fact that it says basadcha v'shachachta, to say that the halacha of shikha applies even regarding the field itself, regarding shikha's kama. So again, that is the machlekes, again, which was introduced regarding because we thought that the Tanna of a Mishnah would be only like Rebbe Huda, not like Rabbanan. That the Gemara answered that no, contextually, it depends if the word basadeh is going to say on the field or in the field. Again, according to Rabbanan, it depends on the context. Now, Boyer Birmi, Rebbe asked the following question related to this concept that we just introduced regarding basadcha, that has to be your field and not when the wind blows it into someone else's field. So he asked a related question. Tzafu oymin l'teich sadehu. If let's say the wind blew his own bundles into his own field, so what's the significance? Because it blew it on top of a rock or on top of a pillar, or it blew one bundle onto another bundle. Mahu, what's the halacha? As the Gemara explains the question. Aver sadeh kesadeh dami. Do we say and equate the ear space in the field like the field itself? And in other words, just like shikha applies when it's forgotten in your field, the ear space, meaning even though it's not on the ground, rather the wind blew it onto something else, would also be considered forgetting in your field. Or maybe it would not be considered as part of your field. It's not in the field. It's on top of something else. And therefore would not be included in halacha of shikha. So Amri Rav Kahana Rav Papi, Rav Kahana said to Rav Papi, Va'amrilan, some say it was actually Rav Kahana that said to Rav Zvid. He said, Tif Shalem and Rav Bavo, Amr Balazi, he wanted to say you should resolve it from this previous statement that we said it from Rav Bavo in the name of Rav Balazi. Because the Amr, he said that you learn that from the word sadcha, prat l'shetzafu oim l'tech stechaver, that it excludes that if the wind blew your bundle into your friend's field. Now the assumption right now is that terminology that the Rav Bavo used was that it literally means to say that it was tzaf. Tzaf really means floating. Meaning to say that not only did it blow it from his field into his friend's field, but it's still floating, meaning it blew onto a rock or a pillar in his friend's field. So the inference, Rav Kahana, the inference he wanted to tell him was, Dechaveroi in l'tech today uloi. What you see from that is, only if the bundle was blown and is blown on top of something else, if it's in his friend's field. But if it's in his own field, then it would be considered sadeyu and it would be considered shikha. So in that, the other one responded to him, Ultameich, what do you mean, according to your reasoning, what do you want to infer? L'teich sdei chaveiroi, that it's only if it goes into his friend's field, then safu, then if it's floating, meaning then if it lands on, let's say, something else like a rock, then in, then yes, it's excluded from the halacha of shikha, but munachan loy, but if, let's say, you're telling me if it landed on the ground on his friend's field, then that wouldn't be excluded. But the problem is, v'abi'in b'satcha v'alaka, that can't be, because as the simple understanding of this drasha is, the halacha of shikha is only in your field. And it's not in your field, it's in your friend's field. So Ella, rather, he refuted the proof and he said no. Obviously, that even if it falls into his friend's field and it's on the ground, obviously that would not be considered the halacha of shikha, because not besatcha, it's not in your field, it's in your friend's field. Now, the haide kamer tsafu, this that he used the terminology of tsafu, that it was floating, it's not because where it landed in the friend's field, it landed on something else. Because the truth is, as we just said before, it'd be even if it landed on the ground, it wouldn't be considered shikha because it's not satcha. This that he used the word tsafu is only because delay mishkachas la. It's because you can't have this conceptualization of having your bundle being in your friend's field, elabit tsafu. Only if the wind came and blew it from your ground into that other person's field. Because again, if you had picked it up, then you had already been zeichen it, and then it wouldn't be shikha no matter what the situation is. The only way it could have been thought that it would be shikha, if the wind blew it, and that we're saying it's not because it has to be besatcha, not bestechavercha, but again, it doesn't mean tsafu because it landed on something else. It's even if it would have landed on the ground, and if we still don't have an answer to the question regarding if something is floating on something else, which the ramifications obviously would be only in the guy's field himself, if that's considered in his field or not, because the airspace is not on the field itself. So Tashima, the Gemara continues trying to bring a raya from the following brisa. The brisa says, let's say someone grabs a hold of one of his bundles because he wants to take it from his field to the city. Now, as Rashi explains, the assumption right now is that that's just a normative way, but it's not necessarily that this is the case. So again, we're talking about someone has a bundle. Now, in the process, you know, he's getting all the stuff together. He puts it on top of another bundle, and he forgets both of those bundles. Now, says the Tanna Kamma of this brisa, hatachta in shikha, the lower bundle is considered shikha, meaning you can't come back for it. Va'elyon ain't a shikha, but the upper bundle is not considered shikha. Whereas Reb Shimon ben Yehuda Omer Mishum, Reb Shimon, he says, no, shneim ain't a shikha. Both of them are not in the halachic category of shikh, and you could come back and get both of those bundles. And he explains why. The lower bundle, because it's buried. And as we mentioned before, there are opinions that say that when it's buried, it's not in the halacha of shikha. And here it's buried underneath the other bundle. And he says, ve'elya, and the upper one is not considered shikha, tzaf, because it's floating. In other words, it's not on the ground, it's not in the sud, it's on top of something else. So both of them are not halachically classified as shikha. Now, so on that, the Gemara wants to prove ad kan loy pligi el betachnis. So the whole machlokes between the Tanna Kamma and Reb Shimon ben Yehuda is only regards if the lower bundle is shikha or not. And that's regards do you define it as tamen? Is tamen considered shikha? Av be'el yoin devra koila havi shikha. But what we see is that everyone holds the upper bundle is not considered shikha, obviously because it's what's called tsaf. Even though it's in his own field, since it's not on the ground, it's on top of something else, it's not considered shikha. So therefore, we resolve that question. If it floats on top of something else, it's not going to be considered shikha. So that the Gemara says, no, there's no raya from that braisa. Kashani has, in that case, is different. Kiven de achzik be, because as we explained the case before, that it was dafka, since the person already held it, zacha be, he already has merited in it, and therefore, hence, it can't be, quote, shikha. Because the halacha of shikha, as is explained above Metzia on Daf Yud Alef and Alef, has to be that it was what's called shechuach me'ikare. It was always forgotten about, meaning you never thought about it. If you had it, and then you forgot about it, it's not called shikha, and for that reason itself, the upper bundle is not shikha, but not because it's on top of something else. Could be if it's on top of something else, it was forgotten from before, meaning if it wasn't that someone picked it up, but rather the wind had done it, then actually maybe then it would be shikha. Now the Gemara asks, Ihachi, if that's the case, the way we just answered, so ma'iri al gabe chaveri. Then why did we say that the upper one, the reason why it's not going to be shikha is because it's on top of the lower bundle? Afilu b'sadinami. What do you mean? Then even if he picked it up because he was going to go to the city and then he puts it down even on the field, should also not be considered shikha. Why does it say it only that it put on a lower bundle? And so that because that would seemingly indicate it's only because it's on lower bundle, which is because of tzav. So now the Gemara says no. In the chanami, you're right. Regarding the upper bundle, that could have been even if he put it on the field. This, that the case was conceptualized as a putter on top of the lower bundle, was only Mishum Tachtan. It was only because it wanted to describe the lower bundle that, as we saw, one opinion holds that it's going to be exempted because it's buried, it's tamun, underneath the upper bundle. But you're right, regarding the upper bundle, everyone agrees it's not shikha, not because it's tough, but rather because he had already merited and then he forgot about it. Now, that the Gemara asks, but how can you say that? But Vaha, but we see the way it's written in the Braisa is Meshu Tzav Kamar. The Braisa says the reason why the upper bundle is not Shikha is because it's floating. So how could you say the reason is because he had already merited when the Braisa says clearly the reason is because it's floating? So that the Gemara answers no. A must say what the Braisa means is Meshu Kitzav is because it's like it's floating. In other words, the reason why he's exempt from this halacha of Shikha is because, as we said, he had already taken hold of it. So it's like as if it's still floating on top of the ground, meaning as if he's still holding on to it. So although he did put it down, that doesn't make a difference. It cannot become shikha anymore. But not because it's literally floating. It's like it's floating. In other words, it's like it's still in his hand. But even though he put it down, it's not because of tzav, and therefore there's no raya from this brisa. Now, related to this brisa that we introduced in a way as an attempt to resolve this question regarding tzav, Abaya said the following statement. This was one day that he felt he had total clarity of mind. So he said, Hareini, I am over here in Pumbedisa, in Babylon. I'm prepared to answer anyone who asks me whatever depth of question and difficulty. Ke ben Azai, like a ben Azai who was very sharp and he used to expound, Beshuki Tveria, in the marketplace of Tveria, I'm ready. Any question, bring it on. I'll answer it. So there was one of the rabbis over there that asked Abaya a very sophisticated question. And he asked him as follows, relating to the topic of our perek. There are two slain people, one on top of the other. Now, significantly is that each one is, they're not exactly in the same proportion towards the other cities. One is drawn more to one direction than the other one in a different direction. Now, therefore, if you measure from one of the slain people, you're actually going to be closer to one city. And if you measure from the other one, you're going to be closer to a different city. So the question he asked Abaya was, Meheichan umaydid? So where do you measure from? Now, as he explains all the different, there are four options in how to resolve this question. And the question goes as follows. Min b'minoi havatamun, do we say, as we mentioned this halacha previously, regarding the halacha of Egla Rufa, that only applies if he's basadeh, but if he's buried underneath a pile of rubble, then he's considered tamun, and if you're buried, then you're not. There's no halacha of egla rufa that applies. So do we say that the bottom corpse, the slain body, is considered buried underneath the top body, albeit that it's min b'mina, it's the same species, they're both the same thing, but they're different items, and therefore the bottom one you don't measure from. In contrast to min b'mina lo havatzav, but at the same time, maybe, and this is the option number one, that in regards to the halacha of tzav, which we also mentioned that you can't have the slain body hanging in the air, it has to be on the ground, so that precludes tzav if it's floating. But here, since they're the same type, the bottom body does not consider as an interposition from the upper body, and we view the upper body as if it is on the ground. Hence, option number one tells us, umayelyin moided. Therefore, you measure regards to the halacha of egla rufa from the upper slain body, because the upper one, the halacha of egla rufa does apply, because we don't consider it floating, because the bottom one is the same type of thing. It's like one contiguous thing from the ground. In contrast to maybe the bottom one, you don't measure from, because it's considered tamun. Or maybe option number two. Min b'minei havatzav. Or maybe you say that regards to the halacha of floating, even if it is the same type, we will consider it as separate. And hence the upper one, you don't have the halacha of egla rufa for, because it's not on the ground. Umin b'minei lo havatamun. And maybe, regards to the halacha of buried, if it's the same type, it's not considered buried. Well, you could say every molecule is considered buried underneath the upper molecule. And you don't say it's buried. So here too, since they're both bodies, you don't consider the bottom one buried underneath the upper one. And hence, umetachin moide. Therefore, you'll measure for the halachas of egla rufa actually from the bottom body. Or option number three, maybe you say, min b'minoi havatamun, maybe it is considered hidden, because it's buried underneath the upper body. And min b'minei havatzav, and maybe you say that the upper body is considered floating, because even though they're the same type, but it's not on the ground. And v'loy metachten moided, v'loy me'elyon moided, and therefore, you don't measure neither from the bottom body or from the upper body, and there's not going to be an Eglah Rufa over here, not for either city that's closest to either the upper one or the bottom one, because the bottom one's buried and the upper one's floating. Now Rashi points out that option number four could have also been mentioned, that Oy Dilma, or maybe, that maybe Min B'Minoy is not Taman, and Min B'Minoy is not Saf, and actually you measure for both of them. It's just that's included already in the options of the other three options. But those are the four options about, so how do you reckon that? That was the question they asked Abaya regarding the halachas of Taf and Taman regarding when it's Min B'mina. So Malais Abaya answered to this, one of these rabbinic scholars, as we continue to Amud Beis, he said, Tinisua, you can resolve it from the following brisa, which as Rashi points out, he was answering at least for one of the two variables. Regarding the halacha of Tamun, when it's buried something in Min B'mina, in the same type, that actually has whole proof in the brisa, which we quoted before, which is why we introduced this, that's actually machloikis regarding Tamun. But as Rashi points out, regarding the other variable about do we say if something is saf, is it considered floating, if it's on the same min, that it doesn't resolve from the brisa, because although saf is mentioned in the brisa, but that as we explained on Amud Aleph, that the reason of the upper one is not considered not shikha, as we'll see in the context of the halachas of shikha, is not considered not shikha because it's tzaf, but rather it's because as he had already taken hold of it, and that's why he was already zeichen it. So that's for a different reason, and therefore, you can't resolve the question regarding the upper one, if you say tzaf or not, but we could resolve, Abaye says, half of your question regarding the lower one from the following brisa, which as we mentioned this brisa before, the halacha says, if someone grabbed a hold of a bundle because he wanted to take it with him from the field to the city, but he was busy taking care of his things, he put it on top of another bundle, and he forgot it, and he went home, and he's like, oh yeah, I forgot it. So the halacha is as follows, the bottom one is considered shikha, you can't come back for it, but the upper one is not considered shikha, and you could come back for it. That's the Tanna Kamma. Shimon ben Yehuda, he says, that no shnei in the shikha. Both of them are not considered shikha. You could come back for both of them. The bottom one, because it is buried, and the halach of shikha does not apply to when it's buried. And the upper one, because it's floating, which again, as we explained in Amud Aleph, it's not really because it's floating. It's like it's floating because it already been zeichen. But one thing is, savrua, the rabbis in the Beis Medrash, they thought that this that Abaya wanted to resolve his question to this rabbinic scholar from this brisa regarding the machloikis of when you have something buried underneath something that's the same min, which in the context that Abaya was asked was regarding two slain bodies, and the context of this brisa is regarding two sheaves, was the hani tanoi, they assumed that what Abaya was trying to say was that these tanoi, meaning even the Tanna Kamma that says that the bottom one is going to be shikha, that both of them are Rabbi Yehuda Svirluhu, that they both agree to Rabbi Yehuda's interpretation, the Amar Basada Pratlataman, that he interprets when it says in the Pasuk, in the field, it excludes something that's buried. It has to be out in the open on top of the field. So, my love, so then therefore they assume that what Abaya was trying to say from the Brisa is that Bahal Kamiflagi. So then what are they arguing about? If they both agree that you exclude something that's hidden, so how do we have this Machlikis regarding the bottom one, if it's Shikha or not? Is because the Marsava, Reb Shimon Yehuda held min b'minoy havatamen, that even if the bottom sheev, the bottom bundle, is underneath an upper bundle, it's still considered buried, even though the upper one is the same species as what itself is. And therefore, it's not going to be considered shikha, because the halachas of shikha don't apply to when it's buried. Whereas the Marsava, but the Tanna Kamma held that when it's min b'minoy, loy havatamen. No, of course he agrees to Reb Yehuda that tamen is no halacha of shikha for. So why does he say that the halachas of shikha do apply to it? It's only because it's not considered buried. Although something's on top of it covering it, but it's the same type. It's another bundle. That does not give it the halachas of tamen. So that's what the rabbis in the Beis Medrash assumed that what Abaye was answering to him was, at least for the question of tamen and min b'minoy, that it's a machlekes. You see clearly that's a machlekes Tanna Kamma and Reb Shimon ben Yehuda, if when it's tamen but min b'minoy, if it's going to be considered tamen or not. And that the Gemara says, loy. No, it's not. You can't say that that's necessarily a proof in this brisa and what Abaye would be saying. Because actually, if they would hold like Rabbi Yehuda, that holds that prat l'tamen, that when it says basad, it excludes something that's buried, the kuliyama, that truthfully what Abaye would be saying, that everyone holds min b'minoy havatamen. Everyone would agree that it is considered buried even though it's in the same species. And that in regards to the question that Abai was asked regarding the two chalolim, the two slain people, you would not measure from the bottom one. Even though the upper one is another body, it would still be considering it that it's tamen, which does not apply for the halachas of Egla Rufa. But rather, v'hacha beplukta, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbanan can hear the machlekes tani kamen, Rabbi Shimon Yehuda, parallels the machlekes Rabbi Yehuda has with Rabbanan. With Rabbanan, Kerabbanan, the Rabbanan will be here, that hold that it's going to be considered shicha, is not because it's tamen and mimbe, it's just because they hold like Rabbanan that tamen is never excluded. They hold that tamen is the same thing as not tamen, as not concealed. Whereas Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda held like Rabbi Yehuda that tamen is a problem, and therefore it's not going to be considered shikha, and even if it's min b'mina. Now the Gemara asks, Yehachim, but if that's the case, that essentially you're saying the machlekes tanikam and Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda is in general, it's paralleling the same machlekes as Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbanan, do you say tamen or not? Is that a disqualification for the halacha or not? So then the question is, my area al gabi chaveri, why did they say specifically the case that they were arguing about regarding when you took one bundle and put on top of another bundle? But afilah ba'afo b'tzurinami, even if it's buried beneath earth and in pebbles, they should also argue, because essentially they're just arguing regarding, do you say the disqualification of tamen or not? Is shikha only if it's revealed or even when it's buried? Why say it in the context of a bundle? In other words, the way we were saying up until now that it specifically was buried underneath another bundle, we said that because everyone agrees tamen is a disqualifying factor. Question is beneath the same min considered a disqualifying factor or not? So that's why we wanted to say that's what they're arguing about regarding do you say tamen b'min b'mina or not? And that's what they assumed Abaye said. But now you're answering that no, that Abaye would be saying from here that actually if whoever held that tamen is a disqualifying factor, that min b'mina would also be disqualifying. So then what are they arguing about? If they're arguing about then essentially if it's tamen or not, so argue about a generic case, whether it's under anything. Why specifically underneath another bundle? So the Gemara says, Enachanami, you're right. Their machlokes, their disagreement, it applies to whatever it's buried beneath. Is being buried disqualifying or not? But, the reason why we picked specifically that it's buried beneath another bundle was to tell you the strength of the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, the Amar Fila Min B'min, Havatamin, was to tell you, which is what Rabbi Shimon Yehuda is going like Rabbi Yehuda, to tell you that even if it's buried beneath something that it's the same type as it, it still considers it as buried, and therefore it's going to be a disqualifying factor. In other words, it's not going to be considered an halacha of shikha, so therefore it's not necessarily the way the Rabban had assumed he was answering him, not that it's a machloikis in this brisa regarding if min b'min is tamen or not, but rather actually whoever holds tamen is a problem would hold as a problem even by min b'min, it is going to be considered as tamen. Tarabanu in the brisa, continuing with the halachas of this Mishnah. Chalal says in the pasuk regarding the halachas of Egla Rufa that there's a slain person. Now, a person is not considered slain until it's with a metal utensil, similarly to like a sword. Now, what that precludes is v'loy chanuk. Not if he was strangled. If he was killed through strangulation, that doesn't apply for the halacha of Egla Rufa. So to Chalal, when it says that he's a slain person, is v'loy mefarfer. Not if he's in the throes of death. If he's still shaking around, that's not considered a chalal. More, when the pasuk says that you find this chalal ba'adama in the earth, is a v'loy tamen begal. It's not buried underneath a pile of rubble. It has to be on the earth, not inside it. Moreover, when it says that he's noifel, that he falls, it means v'loy tala be'ilan. It means to say, but he's not hanging from a tree. And when it says that he falls basada on the field, is a v'loy tzafa b'nayamayim, but he's not floating on the water. It has to be on the ground. That's the Tanakama. Rav Elazar, he says that no, b'kulan, regarding all these cases that the Tanakama disqualified, meaning even if he's shaking, or if he's floating, or if he's buried, or if he's hanging, he says, im hoyechal, if he was slain, then orphan, then you do the halacha of Egla Rufa. Now, Tanya learned the Braisa as a continuum of this previous Braisa, that Amr B'Yisrael B'Yehuda, he says that Amr Loi Rav Elazar, they said and responded to Rav Elazar, Iyatamayda, don't you agree, shim hoyechanuk umutu ba'ashba, let's say the person was strangled, and he was thrown into the heap. In other words, let's say he wasn't floating, and he wasn't buried, and he wasn't hanging, still, wouldn't you agree, Shein Orfin, that you wouldn't do the decapitation of the calf? And the reason why you would agree is because you need, as the Pasuk says, for the person to do the Egla Rufa, to be a chal. A chal is only if he was slain, if he was strangled, even if he doesn't have any other disqualifying factor, then there's not going to be an Egla Rufa. So obviously you agree that the pasuk has to be as it's written. So Alma, so continues the Gemara to explain, so we see that chal, when they use the term chal, it means v'lo chamek, and that you agree to. It has to be slain, not strangled. So hachinami, so therefore they were telling Rabbi Elazar here also, when it says in the pasuk, if you have to translate the words, ba'adama means on the earth, v'lo tamen bagalpa, not buried in a pile of rubble. So too when it says that naifu, that he fell, meaning onto the ground, v'lo tol b'ilan, is not hanging on a tree. When it says besad, on the field, means v'lo tzavagabimayim, not floating on the water. So why do you agree by chal, but you disagree to the other terms of the pasuk, that it doesn't have to be as it's literally said in the pasuk? And that the Gemara says, but whereas Rabbi Elazar, he would say, chal yisiriksev. It says many times in the Pesukim, the term chal, 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 it keeps on coming up. For example, like the pasuk that says, hakrev melchal, the city that's closest to the slain person. The reason why he repeats it is to expound that it has to be specifically a slain person and not someone that's strangled. In contrast to the other terms where it only says it in the way of just giving a description and illustrating it, doesn't repeat it more than once, there it's lav davka, it's not necessarily the way it's described, and therefore he doesn't hold that those are disqualifying factors for halacha v'egla rufa. The only one that's necessary is the fact that he's slain, but if he's floating on water or buried in the ground, you'll still have that halacha according to Rabbi Elazar v'egla rufa. Now, Mishnah said, however, if nimtza samach l'svar, if the slain person is found near the border, or by a city that the majority of the inhabitants are idol worshippers, etc., all the other cases, the halacha was that you don't do egla rufa. What's the reason? Because the Sefer says in the pasuk ki matze, that if the slain person will be found, now prat la matze, that excludes that something that is commonly found. In other words, as if it's found, as if you didn't expect it. In contrast to the border or near a city of the majority are idol worshippers, where there it's expected you're going to find dead people. And therefore, that's not including Kiyimatze, and that's why there's no halacha there of Egla Rufa. Another exception the Mishnah said was, or to a city, if it's near a city that doesn't have a Jewish court, that you don't do Egla Rufa. The reason being is because the Be'inu you need, as the Pasuk says in Dvarim Chav Aleph Pasuk Gimel, says that v'hoya ha'ir ha'krev al-chol, it says that the city that's closest to the slain person, so it says v'lochu zikni ha'ir, that the elders of the city will take eglas, ha'hi of that city, it says eglas bakar, they're going to take this, the calf, and they do the whole procedure of egla rufa. Now, v'leka, but you don't have that, because the city that he was found closest to where he was killed didn't have a bezdin, there was no zikna ear, and therefore it's excluded from the parameters of the halacha requirements of egla rufa. Now the Mishnah then continued and said that ein meididin el le'ir v'chulu, that we only measure, which is to the closest city, to say that they do the procedure of egla rufa, only a city that has a bezdin. Now the Gemara's Peshitta, it's pretty obvious. In the last halacha that we mentioned, the Mishnah that we just explained, kivin the Tana, since he just said that we don't do egla rufa, if we're slain near a city that doesn't have a court, that you only measure near a city that has a court because you need to have zikne ha'ir. So what's the necessity of this next halacha to say that you don't measure to a city, you only measure to one that has courts? So that the Gemara explains, no, hakamash malan, what this next phrase in the Mishnah was teaching was kiddetan, like learn the Braisa, which the Braisa clarifies this point, that says, minayin shem nimtza samach le'ir she'im bezdin. From where do you know that if it turns out that the closest city that the slain person is to a city that doesn't have a Jewish court? Shemanich enoy, so that you leave that city, umaydidin le'ir she'yesh ba'bezdin, and you measure to a city that does have a court. In other words, the closest city is not going to be bringing it because it doesn't have a court. You're actually going to measure to a further city. Tamalema, that's what the Pasuk teaches, v'lochu zikna he'ir ha'hi, that the elders of that city go ahead and bring the egla rufa, which means mikol makim, in whatever situation it is. In other words, this, when it says zikne ha'ir ha'hi, that's when it says ha'ir, it could have just said v'hoya ha'ir ha'kreve el ha'chol v'lochu zikineha. Didn't have to say zikne ha'ir, it could have just said that the closest city that there is, its elders go and bring an egla's bakar. Why does it say ha'ir ha'hi, zikne ha'ir ha'hi? It's coming to say two different halachas in the Mishnah. First, the Mishnah said that if you find the slain person near a city that doesn't have courts, that you don't measure to that city, only to a city that has a court. Now, you still, had you not repeated the next phrase in the Mishnah, you would have thought, okay, so now you don't measure at all, because you go by the closest city, and the closest city doesn't have a court, so you won't be bringing Egla Rufa. That's what the next phrase in the Mishnah teaches, which like this Braisa elaborates and says that no, what the Pasuk is teaching is Ha'ir Ha'hi, not necessarily Zikineha, because Zikineha would mean only the closest city. When we say Zikno Ha'ir, meaning even not the closest city, the next closest city, which has a court, is the one that's going to bring the Egla Rufa in that case. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing in the theme of these halachas of Egla Rufa. The Mishnah says, Nimtze mechuvin bin shtei ayaris. So we said that you go to the closest city. So says the Mishnah, let's say it turns out they measure, and you know what? It's exactly equidistant between two different cities. Exactly. Neither one is closer than the other, even like a hair's breadth. So therefore says the Mishnah, shtein mevir shtei agolis, divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says, so therefore from the two of them, they have to go ahead and now bring two eglas and do the procedures of egla rufa. That's the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Another halacha, the ein Yerushalayim mevi'a egla rufa, if there's the closest city is Yerushalayim, they don't bring the egla rufa, and the Gemara will explain the reason for that. Now another halacha, nimtza roishe b'makam echad, let's say this slain person, they find his head in one place, the gufa b'makam echad, and his body's in another place. So that says the first opinion, melichin haroish etz laguf. What you do is, you bring the head to the body. And the Gemara doesn't explain for what halachic relevance does this mean that you bring the head to the body. But that's Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, that's Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. Rabbi Akiva, I mean, he says the other way around. He says, Haguf Eitz L'Rosh, you bring the body to the head. Now, another halacha, Me'ayin Hoyu Moedidin. From where did you measure? In other words, we said you measure from the slain person to which is the closest body. Now, from where? There's a head, there's a foot, there's hands. Which part of the body is it that you measure from to see which is the closest city? So it's a three-way machlekes. Rabbi Eliezer, I mean, he says, Mitivurai. From the person's navel, from his stomach area. Rabbi Akiva Omer, he says, Michaigme, from the person's nose. And Rabbi Lezeb Yaakov, he says, Mimokim Shanasa Chal, from the place where he became what the Pasuk describes him as a slain person, which generally that is Mitzivari from his neck, and that's where you measure from. Now the Gemara asks, my time at Rabbi Eliezer, the opening halacha in the Mishnah was, now if you have a slain person exactly in between two cities, both cities have to bring an Egla Rufa. So what's the reason of Rabbi Eliezer? So the Gemara explains it hinges on two criteria. First of all, Ksava Efshalat Samson. Rabbi Eliezer holds that there is a halachic feasibility of being exacting in your measurements. In other words, we rely on the fact that the measurements were precise, and really it is that none of the cities are any closer than the other one to the slain person. So it turns out that actually both of them are the close city. Now, moreover, another thing is that Rabbi Eliezer holds is that Ukrevu, when the Pasuk writes that it has to be the closest city, even though it says in the singular term, it means Vafila Krevis, it means even more than one closed city. Whereas Rashi brings a Pasuk in Yoina, for example, that says Ubehema Rabba, where although it says in the singular, it means many animals. Now, as Rashi explains, the reason why you need to have, well, obviously the second variable you need, because it's saying it's not necessarily only one closed city, it could be even two closed cities. But the reason why you need the first variable, the first halachic component, is because if you would hold that it's not possible to be exacting, we don't know precisely down to the measurement, is because then really it would turn out that really one of them is really closer than the other. It's just we don't know because our measuring tools only go that far. Now, if that would be the case, that's what we would hold, that EF Shalat Samson, you can't be exacting, then, actually, Rabbi Eliezer should have said, okay, so fine, we don't know which one's closest, but together they should have brought one Egla Rufa and chipped in. And then they would have said to each other, look, if we're the closest city, then your portion in it is given over to us. And if you're the closest city, then our portion is given over to you. From the fact that he doesn't say that, and rather he says that both have to bring one, their own Egla Rufa, is because he holds, we can say exactly that you're both the Ir HaKreva, and therefore both of them have to bring their own Egla Rufa. Now another halacha our Mishnah said was Ve'en Yerushalayim Mevi'a Egla Rufa. But the city of Yerushalayim, if they're the closest city, they don't bring the decapitated calf. And the reason for this is because the Amakra, the Pasuk says in Devarim, which is in Chaf Aleph, that says this Pasuk that we quoted before, Ki Matzei Chol Ba'adam, if you find a slain person on the ground, Asher Hashem Lekecha Noisin L'cha, that Hashem your God has given to you L'rishta, to inherit, so then you have the whole halacha of Egla Rufa. Now Uksaver, and The Tana of our Mishnah holds Yerushalayim loy neschalka l'shvatim. It's a machlokes, but the Tana of our Mishnah holds like that opinion holds that Yerushalayim is not inherited. It wasn't apportioned amongst the shvatim, and therefore you can't consider it as l'rishta, and that's why it doesn't apply to the halachas of Egla Rufa.
Now, another halacha mentioned in our Mishnah was the machleika is about nimtza roisha b'makom mechulu. If let's say the head is found in one place and the body is found in another place, there was a machleika, do you bring the head to the body or the body to the head? So ask the Gemara, but my kamifli regarding what are they arguing about? So the general assumption would be, as the Gemara asks, if you're saying they're arguing regarding the measurements, in other words, the one who says that you bring the head to the body is telling you that you measure from the body. And that's what you have to measure from, and therefore you bring the head to the body. On that, asks the Gemara, Bahama Diktani Sefer, but from the fact that the Mishnah continues afterwards, in a different halacha, that says, Me'ayin ha'yumaydidin, so where would they measure from? So Machlav, the Reisha, lo'y b'mendidaskin, so obviously the Reisha that was talking about the head to the body to the head, was not talking about measurement, because only later do we introduce, oh, and where do we measure from? So Amar Bitzchak, rather, Bitzchak explains what they were arguing about was, b'meis mitzvah konuk mekoyme, regarding the halacha of a mes mitzvah, which is somebody that has no one to bury him, he just died somewhere out in the desert, regarding that he acquires his place. In other words, he's actually buried where he was found, which is one of the 10 conditions that Yeshua made when they came to Eretz Yisrael, as the Gemara explains himself. That's what commitfully, that's what they're arguing about. And this is what the Mishnah was saying. The Kaibri, to bury him, he acquires his place. Now, that's what the Mishnah qualifies and says. Now, but what do you do if his head was found in one place and his body was found in another place? So where did he acquire as his place to bury him? Not burying his head separately and his body separately. So in that, the first opinion says, Melichan HaReisha Itzla Guf. Rabbi Eliezer says, what you do is you bring the head to the body and that's where you bury him. Rabbi Kiva, he says, HaGuf Itzla HaReisha. No, you bring the body to the head and that's where you bury him. So ask the Gemara, so what is the fundamental principle that they're arguing about? So that the Gemara explains, Mar Sav Rabbi Eliezer held, Kufei Bedochtei Nafal. When the person is slain, the body falls exactly where he was killed. Reisha did not even awful. The head, however, then rolls and falls somewhere else. So therefore, that's not where he was slain. So it's where he was slain where he's buried. So therefore, you bring the head to the body. Whereas the mouse of Rabbi Kiva held that no, Reisha hecha did awful. The head, where it falls, that's where it falls. And Gufa hu derot azul, but it's the body that rolls a little bit, and therefore the body is brought to the head, and that's where it's buried. And then the Mishnah continued, as we just referred to before, me'ayin ha'yimoydin. So from the slain body, do you measure to see which is the closest city? So it's actually a three way machlokes. So the Gemara says, "B'mayke miflugi." So what is the principle that they're arguing about? So the Gemara says, "Marsa Rebbe Kiva holds ikr chiyusa, the primary life of a person." Now, therefore, this is what they're arguing about regarding what's the primacy of a chol. A chol is a slain person when he loses his life. So you want to know where do you measure from? Because it says el ha'arim asha svivas achol. You have to measure it to the cities that are closest to the chol. So chol is the absence of life. So where does he become a chol? He becomes a chol from where is his life. So where is the primacy of life in the person? Rabbi Kiva holds it's ba'ape, it's in his nostril. That's where a person gets his breath. That's where his chiyus is. So therefore, that's where he's a chol from. And therefore, that's where you measure from. Whereas in Marasov, Rabbi Eliezer held, then no ikke chiyus b'tivuri, the primary life of a person is in his navel area. That's where his primacy is. And therefore, that's where you measure from. That's where he becomes a chol. So the Gemara says, let's say this machlekes Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Kiva is the same machlekes as the following tanoim and the following braisa. The braisa says, Mehechen havlad noitzer. From where is it that the fetus is formed? In other words, we know that it starts off as a seed and as just it then germ and then it grows and becomes a person. So where does the formation start from? I mean, it has to start from one point and then go to the rest of the body. So the first opinion holds Me'reishle. Starts from the head. So too, he brings a proof from the Pasuk in Tehillim. Pasuk in Tehillim says, Mimei imi, from my mother's womb, ata geizi. You drew me forth. Now, but the term, why it used the term geizi, is because there's a Pasuk in Yirmi that says, Gazi nizrich, also means pulling out. Meaning, pulling out the hair of your head, which is what the Naziris is, Vashlichi, begayim, and take it and throw it away. Now, the context is not as important as what we see is that the term geizi is related to the head, which is what nizrich is, which is the hair in the head. So you see that Hashem, you drew me forth from my mother's womb, which again started me off in the head. That's where it starts from. Now, Bisholem, he argues, he says, no, mitiburi, the fetus begins to develop from its navel area. And mishalach sharshay elich ve'elich, and then it sends its roots out to the extremities, but it starts from the center. So the Gemara says, seemingly that's the same machlekes that between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Eliezer over here, that is it from tivurai, from the stomach, from the center, or is it from the head, from the nose area? And the Gemara says, no, afilatema abishol. You could even say that abishol in that brisa, who says that the child develops from the center, could actually hold like Rabbi Kiva, that holds that the life of a person is actually in his head, meaning by his nose. Because adkan lekama abishol, where did we find abishol saying it's tiburai? It's ella in yitzira. He was just told by regarding the formation. Because when the child, the fetus, develops, it's formed from the center. But regarding the life of a person, who everyone would agree that it's actually in the face, in the nose. Because the chesed, like it says, a passing bereshis, kolash nishmas ruach chayim ba'apa begaimer, that whatever has the soul and the spirit of life in its face, in its nose, which is what an af is, then etc., whatever the pasuk is talking about, but we see that the ruach chaim of a person, the life, the spirit of life of a person is in his nose, and therefore it could be that Abishol would agree to the opinion of Rabbi Kiva. Now the third opinion mentioned on Mishnah was Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, I mean, he says, Mimokim shenasa chol. Actually, the place where you measure from is where he became a chol, because everyone agrees that's where you measure from. Question is chol defined as the absence of his life, which is either tiburai or from his nose? Or, like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, from the place where he actually became a slain person, which is mitzavari, from his neck, where he was killed. So the Gemara asks, my time, the Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, what's the reason of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov that he says that it's from the neck where he's called a chol? Like it says the pasuk in Yecheskel, losis oisach, to place you el tzavri chal le'risham, to the neck of the slain ones of the wicked. So we see that that's where a chol is considered, is from the neck, and that's why that's where you measure from, because that's what the pasuk says, el achol, you have to measure from the chol, and therefore that explains the three machlokes of where you measure from the slain person to see which is the closest city.